Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. It's all there for you. It's for free. Use it to your advantage. Help you to have the maximum opportunity to be successful. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Steve Malanga is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Steve's been with us before. He's a member of our Brain Trust. He's also contributing editor of the City Journal in New York City. He's also senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's also the author of The New Left, a book that came out earlier this year. And he was on the show introducing us to it a while back. And he's with us right now. Steve, welcome to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you here. Saw you on television earlier last week. You did a good job.
I appreciate it. There was a tremendous amount of interest, not only in New York, but around the country. I actually did a number of different national television shows. I'm not quite sure which one you saw, but but there was an astounding amount of interest. And I do think because there are broader issues at stake here, although people do seem to have a fascination with New York City.
Well, anyway. you warned us about this. I remember, and what I think I may have mentioned to you earlier when we were talking last week, is that I when I was talking about what was happening, especially with some of my friends like yourself who are in New York City, who are regular guests on my show, we were talking about the challenges they were having in New York City with the transit strike. And I was pointing out to them, in fact, Steve Forbes is on the show on Friday, and I was pointing out, and he knew about your book, The New Left, and I was just pointing out that that you wrote about this in your book. I said, Steve told us that this kind of thing was going to be happening probably with more frequency as they gained more power. And what you said, as they became more of a majority, the government unions, the government workers, the teachers unions, as all those people became a voting bloc in these major cities, you warned us about this, didn't you?
Well, yeah, you know, the thing is, and this is what I've been talking about even with relation to the transit strike, is as I point out in the book, this is really a 40 to 50 year cycle that began in the early 1960s when public employee unions were first given the right to organize and to negotiate, because previous to this, government workers had been protected and are still protected by civil service rules and regulations. Not quite the same as private sector workers who didn't have those protections. And really, early on in the 1960s, we saw, especially in the mid 1960s, we saw a whole bunch of strikes immediately. In 1 year, in 1966, there were actually 36 teacher strikes in major cities around the country. Shut down education
system. I remember those.
Yeah, and that actually began the process of giving public employee unions a tremendous amount of power and also a lot of benefits, which is, I'm talking about employee benefits, health benefits, which were partially what this strike is about. But what made this strike so unusual, Jim, is that after the 60s and the 70s, what happened is the unions figured out that what they could do really is exercise their political power in state capitals and in city halls and behind the scenes. So we actually saw the strikes start to receding, and instead what happened is we saw a lot of legislation in a lot of places, California, New York, New Jersey, Illinois, Rhode Island, in which they were actually sort of making their gains, not by going on strike, but by wielding their political power at the ballot box, electing friendly legislatures.
Mm-hmm.
And what it sort of resulted in particular, and I write about this in there's a piece that I wrote that's in the current issue of City Journal that's online. It's called The Conspiracy Against Taxpayers, and the subtitle is Why Public Servants Live Better Than the Public. And I write about this in this particular article. It's about all of the sort of costs that have been imposed on the system
right.
by these special interests and these power blocks.
Book, you call them tax eaters.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And in this latest article I wrote, I go around the country and I talk about, for instance, all the unfunded pension liabilities, because you have places like California and New York where the average retirement age of a public employee is 55. Uniformed personnel, the average retirement age is now 50. That includes not just a full pension, but it includes health benefits for the rest of your life, benefits for your family for the rest of your life, things that you don't really have in the private sector anymore. And so what you see is around the country, you see cities and states where more and more of the municipal budgets and the state budgets are going to pay for these benefits, which are doing one of either two things. It's either squeezing out other spending, like, for instance, education spending, or it's raising taxes. Or in some cases, like California or New York, where they really have a lot of fiscal stress, it's doing both.
Well, Tom... Steve, I was reading something that you wrote here, and that name popped into my head. Steve, the unfunded pension liability of the New York MTA, the Transit Authority, is $1
billion. $1 billion, yes. Well, and the thing
this is... This is in an article that you wrote that was in the Wall Street Journal Online called What Would Reagan Do?, which I want to get to in a minute. $1 billion, Steve, that the MTA is an unfunded pension. Who's going to pay that money?
Well, the taxpayers are, because there's no other way around it. These benefits are constitutionally guaranteed. Here's the thing, in the article that I wrote... that's online now in City Journal, before the strike began, I point out that total pension liabilities for public employee pension plans around the country, I think there are 108 public employee pension, total unfunded liabilities is $250 billion. Now, that's enough to scare you. And these are constitutionally guaranteed. The MTA has...
When you say constitutionally guaranteed, explain that to us. Is it what it sounds like?
Yes. What it means is that in most states, this is part of, what the public employee unions have been able to do, as I said, is they go to places like Albany or Sacramento or Trenton or these state capitals, and because they have become politically powerful, they get an awful lot of legislation passed that we're not even aware of, because really voters focus on the large issues. So in a place like New York State, for instance, once someone starts working for any kind of public sector entity, the way the Constitution of the state is written is whatever the benefits that person gets, those benefits can't be taken away. You can never say to that person, we can't pay your, we can't pay your health benefits for the rest of your life, so we're going to take them away from you.
Right. Steve, hold on to that thought. Steve Malanga, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest. He's the author of The New Left, and he's covering this very explosive and very illegal strike. It's been resolved now, but I think maybe to the New Yorkers' detriment. When we come back, I'm going to ask him what he thinks President Reagan would have done. Stay with us. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Steve Malanga. He's the author of The New Left, How American Politics Works Today. And it's all about, folks, I encourage you to check out this book. This book tells you about what's happening especially the large cities, right, Steve? That's really what you focus on. Where your concern is how public sector unions, teachers unions, the transit authority unions, et cetera, how they're getting control, as you mentioned in the previous segment, how they're getting control of the politics and the laws and the taxes that are being passed and charged in the major cities.
Yes, the thing I point out in the book, of course, is that it began with the major cities, but because cities are such an important political and population center for a lot of states, it's actually they've actually made the leap. I mean, California is an example now. The public employee unions, you hear this over and over again, really control Sacramento. New York State is another example of that. You look at a suburban state like New Jersey, and you look at the incredible problems that this state, one of the richest states in the country, and yet can't balance their budget consistently year after year. So it's actually moved out from big cities into, you know, Illinois is another example, another state with the same kind of fundamental problems. So it's gone from the cities like Chicago to the entire state. It's gone from cities like New York City to Albany and to the entire state.
Well, Steve, the reason I want to talk about this on the show is because every time something like this gets passed, every time a concession is made to these unions, it hurts small businesses, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. A place like New York City is a very good example because, you know, really, I got my start writing about business. I spent most of my time writing about small business. I was a business reporter and editor. And one of the things, if when I talk about my political conversion, the thing that drove my political conversion was I watched what happened to small business in New York City, and I said, this is just unfair. It is one of the most business-unfriendly environments that you will find anywhere. And in particular, what I remember is during the 1991 and 1990 recession in New York City, which was very, very deep.
Right.
The Dinkins administration did all kinds of things. They increased fines and fees on businesses. They did anything they could not to lay off public sector workers or to reduce services, and that included tremendous burdens on small businesses. I'll never forget the things that, when I was at a publication called Crane's New York Business at the time, we did an entire issue just on the plight of small business in New York City. So, unfortunately, that is the case.
And it's not just that they demand all these things, which I'm going to want you to tell us about in a second, but then if they don't get all the candy that they want, they go on strike at the absolute worst moment for these small businesses. Steve, as you know, the week before Christmas, many small businesses do as much business in the month and the week before Christmas as they may do in the month. Sometimes they do as much in a month as they do in a year, and those last 4, 5, or 6 days are critical to their survival to help them get through January, February.
Well, and in particular, it's the kind of small businesses that can't pick up and leave and go somewhere else.
That's right.
The retail
family businesses.
Absolutely, because, you know, they're the businesses that are dealing with consumers on the ground, on the street. They're not the kind of businesses that do, you know, services worldwide where you can just sit at a computer anywhere. So those are the businesses that are really stuck. They're locked in place, if you will.
Let me stop you for a second. I want to get to a couple other points quickly. Who won the strike is over. Who won?
Well, you know, at this point, they're still negotiating a contract. But the thing is that the Metropolitan Transportation Authority already pulled off the table a number of their pension reform demands. So I would say that the union certainly isn't going to be a loser. At this point, they're going to, at best, be able to maintain all of the different sort of pension benefits and health care. So I think that the going forward, every day it's like what I call a pension time bomb, and every day it gets bigger and bigger, and this strike isn't going to help in any way ameliorate it.
What did Governor Pataki and Mayor Bloomberg do? Did they do the right thing? Did they manage this properly as well as you would have liked them to?
Well, they talked tough, and they did go to court to get the fines against the union, which is the least you would hope. The thing is that it isn't about this strike. It's about how we got here, and the fact of the matter is that Governor Pataki, for instance, in the last year or so, has been tougher on the unions, but he's been in office for 12 years, and he signed into legislation many of the pension perks that have, in fact, been passed by Albany, oftentimes unanimously by both the Republican Senate and the Democratic Assembly.
What would Governor Reagan have done?
Well, certainly the thing that I raised in this...
Because it was, if he were president, he couldn't have done anything.
Right. What I raised in this particular piece is the analogy with the air traffic controller strike, in which Reagan said you have 48 hours to come back to work because this is an illegal strike. You're violating your contract. Violating the law. And if you don't come back, we're going to fire you. And they didn't come back. And you remember Reagan did fire them, and
he
reconstituted the entire workforce, the entire air traffic controller workforce, 11,500 people.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really interesting, of course, is that everyone said, oh, you can't do that. There'll be plane crashes, there'll be this, there'll be that. And the thing about Reagan, of course, is that he was the kind of politician who basically said, when people said to him, you can't do that, he said, what do you mean I can't do that? And Rudy Giuliani was the same way in New York.
By the way, I was flying myself in those days. I was a current pilot in those days when all that was going on, and there was no problems. Hey, let me ask you a question. Have you got a website you want to give us?
Yeah, you know, City Journal's website is www.city-journal.org.
And also ManhattanInstitute.com, or .org.
Also, Manhattan-Institute.org.
Manhattan-Institute. And the book is called The New Left. Stephen Malanga, M-A-L-A-N-G-A. Thank you, Steve, for being here. Good job today. We'll see you next time.
All right, take care.
Quick break. Right back with a new friend, Lois Christie. Stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.